As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell.
And I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
And welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. It's Wednesday, which means we'll be picking out one article from all the brilliant writing available on The Athletic and putting the author under the spotlight.
Tadic van Dolberg, better than that, he found Ziyech, who finds the net!
Hi, Barca fans, Frankie here. This summer I will move to Barcelona, very happy, proud, excited.
Donny was ready to come on, as all the players should be. I've been a sub more than anyone.
Today, the brilliant Raphael Honigstein joins us to discuss his article profiling Ajax and their manager, Erik ten Hag. Lots of attention on their re-emergence as a major European force, 2 years on from being seconds away from reaching a Champions League final.
Yeah, an exciting podcast and a very exciting coach as well, who worked under Pep at Bayern Munich and whose team's ethos and style has seen him earning observers across Europe. We're also going to have a look at how some of the stars from that 2019 squad are getting on and highlight the players at the heart of this revival right now who could be in demand just as high as those previous players were in the summer.
Not to mention sporting director Mark Overmars and chief executive Edwin van der Sar as well. We're going to say hello to Raf in a moment. But first, Dan, I haven't had a chance to chat to you yet. I did message you after the news on the weekend. But Dean Smith sacked over the weekend as Aston Villa head coach. I know you've been doing the rounds on radio and pretty much every single podcast that exists. But yeah, how are you feeling about the whole situation?
Still sad, Flo. Because, you know, Dean Smith leading Villa and Jack Grealish as captain, that was the dream. It was the dream ticket for Villa fans, really. You know, a fan as a manager, a fan as a captain, both very, very good at what they did as well. You know, it's not a prerequisite to be a Villa fan in these roles, but it was just a really, really nice thing. And Dean Smith took Villa back to the Premier League. You know, we were going nowhere until he came in. So Dean Smith revived Aston Villa, picked them up off the floor in the Championship. I would have said that he's got credit in the bank. You know, I was sad to see him lose his job. 2021 hasn't been great and we have lost five in a row this season. So I do understand why the owners have decided to do what they did, because they want progress season upon season and they were worried that there wasn't going to be that progress this time round. But Dean Smith changed Aston Villa Football Club and I just remember him with fondness. It's been a really, really special time. I guess from the outside looking in, you know, as a football fan in general, Flo, yourself, it probably looks a little bit harsh, doesn't it?
Yeah, I certainly think it was harsh just because, I mean, having chatted to you and all the things you mentioned like that, it felt like this was a blip. I mean, obviously, I don't know the club as well as you do and I don't know the feeling among the fans in general, but certainly from the outside looking in, it felt like this was just a bad patch rather than, you know, the start of a real downward turn. That's the sense that I got. But clearly, the owners felt the opposite. Clearly, they felt like he wasn't going to turn it around. But it did seem quite harsh. I mean, what would it take for you to sort of have your mind change? Because it seems like you are of the opinion that it was the wrong decision. But what would it take in order to you to think, oh, maybe actually we did need this?
I think that's part of my problem with it. You know, ultimately, whoever gets the job at Villa, I will back and they will have my full support. But when you're losing a manager, you're a bit like Tottenham. I mean, he wasn't doing great, but I use it as an example. You know, Tottenham have lost Nuno, but there was an obvious massive upgrade there available, willing to come in Conte. When I look at the list of managers who could potentially come in at Villa, I don't see that there's that massive guaranteed step up. I don't. There's plenty of good names on that list, and you know whoever comes in could come in and be better than Dean Smith. But on face value, when you look at the names on the list and the people that are linked, I don't see that there's that definitive upgrade. That's my slight issue with it.
And finally, I just want to ask: are you worried about relegation?
No, famous last words, but no, I don't.
So you're confident no matter who comes in, there's enough there to keep them up.
We haven't had a fully fit squad all season. There's been COVID stuff going on. There's been players travelling around South America and then coming back on the day of the game and playing. There's been so much disruption. Grealish leaving was always going to mean that it was going to be a stodgy start to the season and trying to bed new players in. And all those players haven't been on the pitch at the same time. I think one of Dean Smith's downfalls was probably that he couldn't seem to settle on a formation and couldn't seem to settle on that consistent 11, although I don't think that was all his fault this time round. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think it'll be Steven Gerrard. I think he seems to be the one that the ownership want. And if he comes in, as I say, he'll have my full support.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. And it's just been sack central, hasn't it? That was, what, three in the space of a week? Nuno, Daniel Farker and Dean Smith. So it really is sacking season, not to even mention stuff going on in the Championship right now and across the EFL. So, yeah, it's the most wonderful time of the year, isn't it? And more to come, I guess, as well.
So if you want to keep up to date with the managerial merry-go-round, The Athletic will be the place to do that. And at the moment, you can save 33% on the cost of a full subscription and listen to the podcasts ad-free via the app. All you got to do to take advantage of that offer is head to theathletic.com/footballpod. Rafa, welcome to the podcast. You did a piece last week on Ajax and how they've stayed true to Ten Hag. They are absolutely flying at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, they're playing really well. Beat Dortmund home and away. Got a little bit lucky, perhaps, at the Westfalenstadion. But yeah, one of the sides that you really enjoy watching as a neutral, not just because of the romantic notion of Ajax, but just the way they play. It's just so much fun. And I think they might be as good, if perhaps even better than the Ajax team that went within a whisker of making it to the final in 2019. So, very special side.
Yeah, it's almost been a mini rebuild since that time you talk about. I mean, they are quite a romantic club, aren't they, Ajax? I remember having an Ajax shirt when I was a kid. You know, they were a really, really good team when I was growing up. And it is great to see them being talked about at the higher echelons of the Champions League again.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a bit like Ajax used to be. Before all the globalized exposure, perhaps, that you had. They're still a little bit distant. They're still a bit exotic. You don't see them very often. But when you do see them, big Champions League night, it's like, ah, okay. Same shirt, same style. You can sort of appreciate it. You appreciate the brand in the nicest sense. I think there's something romantic or optimistic in the notion that you can succeed as a relatively small club. I mean, they're, of course, the biggest club in the Netherlands, but by European standards, they're relatively small. Their turnover is smaller than Norwich's was in the Championship, which just goes to show that those kind of clubs, they're just forced to work a lot harder in harnessing their potential and making sure that they can still be competitive without spending huge money. And I think there's always something quite admirable when you see a club that doesn't have any external investment, that is self-sustainable, find a way of really challenging the bigger sides, the big beasts of European football, and they do it really well.
Your piece really goes into detail about who Ten Hag is as a coach. So tell us a bit about his playing style and his personality as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because Ten Hag, unlike the big Ajax coaches of the past, sort of the icons, the Van Gaals and the Cruyffs and the Rinus Michels, he doesn't come from Amsterdam. He comes from a small place near the German border, very provincial. And he has a different accent. I couldn't tell the difference, but Dutch people apparently can. And I think they belittled him a little bit. They looked down on him a little bit because he'd come from being the Bayern Munich second team coach, which is the under 23 coach effectively, and coaching Utrecht, you know, which is one of the less glamorous sides in the Dutch league, to coaching Ajax. And I think he had to work against that perception to a certain extent as an outsider, because Ajax, part of their mythology is promoting from within to have Ajax people, former players, as they have indeed in the managerial roles upstairs in Overmars and Van der Sar. But he didn't quite fit the bill. And I think he had to work quite hard to change people's perception and to open their minds to his ideas of football, which were a bit of a break, as well as keeping within the Ajax tradition. The Ajax tradition is a very clearly defined 4-3-3, lots of possession, lots of width. And I think he modified it just enough to be still modern and to be more relevant in tactical terms, but not too far away from the original blueprint to upset the traditionalists and the purists. So his team is more of a 4-2-3-1. They don't really keep the ball just to keep the ball for some kind of weird ideal of beauty, what football is supposed to look like. It's much more driven, much more focused on finding spaces, on being vertical, on playing in transition. So he's introduced these sort of more modern elements, if you will, to what was already, of course, the pretty well-defined stylistic idea of Ajax. And the combination is great. But it's not just him. I think it's also some really clever moves in the transfer market. Ajax have changed from relying solely on youngsters, as they did around 10 years ago, to having a much more balanced and blended squad, where they go and buy 3 or 4 seasoned professionals who bring the experience and mix that with their own youth products, but as well as the odd South American import who I think bring something else as well, bring perhaps a kind of a street smartness, a bit of a nasty streak at times that perhaps you don't have if you're an academy player who's just come through the ranks.
I mean, it sounds incredible, this style of football. It's total football, but with a German twist. And what I like thrown in there as well, the resoluteness of the Italian style of defence as well that they've added this season. That is some combination. I mean, if you were to pick the perfect style of football, I think you would throw all those things together, wouldn't you?
Yes. I mean, when I said that, you know, you find the resoluteness that you'd perhaps expect in Northern Italy, I don't necessarily mean that you have these really, you know, grizzled defenders who bite your legs all the time. It's just the organization and the hunger, if you will, and the application to defend as a unit. The result is sort of what you might find in a textbook about defending, but of course it's done in a very different style than, you know, than what we think of Italian defending, which is much more sort of reactive. But yeah, they've been incredibly good when it comes to defending their own goal. Their goal record is the best since 1995 in the Dutch league, which was the high time of Van Gaal when they were European champions. So it's not just a good team, and as of the moment, it actually seems to be a good team even in a historic dimension as far as Ajax is concerned. And I hope that they can keep going and maybe, yeah, do what they did a couple of years ago when they really upset some big clubs. I think it's almost forgotten a little bit because people in the UK think of the big Spurs game, and that's really how they remember Ajax. But the way that they knocked out Real Madrid 4-1 at the Bernabeu, the way that they knocked out Juventus, were just incredible results, incredible performances.
And since then as well, I mean, they've lost some key players that were part of that team who've gone on to other sides in Europe. And actually, when you touch on this in the piece, but when you look at those players, Hakim Ziyech at Chelsea, Donny van der Beek at Manchester United, Frankie de Jong at Barcelona, just a couple of those names, a lot of them have regressed since departing. Is that a sign of how good he is as a coach and how good he is at developing players?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. I mean, first of all, of course, if you're a good player and you play for Ajax, it's easier than playing for Man United at the moment. I think most good players would struggle almost regardless of where they come from. If you come to a dysfunctional side, it's very, very hard. But it is also true that, and we know this from Klopp at Dortmund, and I think this is a similar situation, that players who are coached really well, who are part of a functioning collective, they seem to be playing at a high level individually, but perhaps they're not. Perhaps they're just doing stuff as part of a system, and it looks as if they're brilliant because they know that the teammate is making that run, and they will find that teammate almost automatically if they have to play that pass out of their own inspiration. Maybe you can't be executed as easily if you put them in a team with 10 different players. So players tend to suffer, I think, a little bit once they're out of that system, when the system is so well formulated and works so beautifully. And there's also, of course, I think we have to appreciate that there is a difference between playing in the Dutch league and in the Premier League or in the Bundesliga because of the standard of the opposition. You will not score as many goals. It won't be as easy for you. So there is that. But what's also interesting is, I think they, in a strange way, they seem to have been one of the winners of the coronavirus crisis, because no one had any money this summer to pinch their best players. So they had a relatively quiet year where they were left alone, and they could even go out and buy one of the key players of their main rivals domestically, Steven Berghuis from Feyenoord, which is a bit like, you know, Liverpool buying... Well, I can't think of a midfielder that Liverpool want to be buying from United, but let's say it's the other way around. Let's say it's, you know, United picking up Fabinho or Firmino, Roberto Firmino. So that was a big move for them. The fact that they kept the team together is one of the reasons why they're doing so well this year, because the upheaval hasn't been as big as it has been in the two previous years.
Do you almost feel like this could be the last dance for this side, a little bit like that great team that we just spoke of, that they all got picked off the summer after the Champions League? And is it almost like a last dance scenario now, where, you know, they are going to get picked off this time next year?
Yeah, it could well be. I mean, at Ajax, they are very realistic about where they are in the food chain. And if somebody comes around which quadruples somebody's wages, you cannot keep that player. I think that's something that perhaps people from the outside looking in don't always appreciate, when they say, you know, accuse clubs of being selling clubs. It's not that they want to sell necessarily, but you cannot keep players who have an offer that goes from 2 million a year to 10 million euros a year. It's not possible. You can say that, okay, well, I'll keep you this year, but next year then there's an understanding, an intrinsic understanding, that player will be allowed to go, because otherwise you're just destroying that player's career. So you cannot do it. And that's why you sell if you're Ajax. But of course they sell really well, and they invest the money that comes in really well, because they turn a profit and they keep buying better and better players, and they're getting to a point where they can keep players a little bit longer. They don't have to sell straight away, because the wages, you know, they're out of sync between the wages that they pay and the Premier League maybe is not times 5 or times 4, and it's only times 3. So that gives you a bit more room to maneuver and to say, yeah, we understand that, but, you know, stay with us one more year. You see what happened to De Ligt. You know, he maybe should have stayed a couple of years more. You see what happened to Van de Beek. Stay with us, and then you can still move when you're 22, 23. You don't have to move when you're 19 or 20. And I hope that this is not the last dance for this team, that maybe they'll sell one or two, but that the bulk will stay together for a couple of more years.
We talk about how good this team is, but actually when you dig into the numbers, it's kind of phenomenal. I mean, obviously, like you said, there's the caveat of the Dutch league and the competition, but you wrote this piece alongside Tom Wervel, who's since left the Athletic to join RB Leipzig to work on their analytics side of things. I mean, how good are Ajax's numbers right now?
Yeah, they're incredibly good. Domestically, they're incredibly good. They're as good as any Ajax team in modern history, perhaps even better. And interestingly, Tom has this method of trying to evaluate teams in a more absolute sense, because it's very difficult to compare teams across leagues. But there is a system that's a little bit based on the way that chess players are evaluated. It's called the ELO model, where you weigh the strength of the opposition and then award points accordingly. And when we did the piece just before Dortmund, before they went to Dortmund and beat them for a second time, he figured out that they are the ninth best team in Europe at the moment, between Atletico Madrid and Manchester United. Might be surprised to hear that Manchester United are the 10th best team in Europe, but that's a different story. That was before I think a couple of defeats from them as well. So maybe their position has slipped since. But I think it's a pretty good indication. There will still meet tougher opposition in the Champions League when it comes to the knockouts for which they have qualified. And if they get knocked out in the last 16, then maybe all of this, you know, excitement will die down quite quickly. But if they knock one of the big scalps out as they did, then I think people will wake up to how good they are. But my point is, looking at them, is that you can and should appreciate them almost independently of that, because over a knockout, you know, anything can happen. They might be the better side and still get knocked out. But the football that they play, especially if you can't really see it that often, is actually really worth checking out.
Can we just talk about Tom working with UEFA and then getting signed by Leipzig? I mean, I'm hoping that maybe Dortmund might come in for me after this podcast, after working with you. That seems crazy. Leipzig just signing one of the Athletic writers.
I don't think it had anything to do with me, as much as I'd love to take credit for that. No, I think, look, what it shows you is that the Athletic is read in the right places.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So that's good news for us.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast, and we've still got plenty left to discuss with Rafa, including the latest ones to watch at Ajax, former Arsenal winger Mark Overmars, and Ten Hag's next job in football. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Here's Dele Alli. Here's Lucas Moura. Oh, they've done it! I cannot believe it! Lucas Moura with the last kick of the game! The Ajax players collapse to the ground! Tottenham Hotspur are heading to the Champions League final!
It's funny to think about the different trajectories of those two clubs since the semi-final. Maybe not funny for Spurs fans, but very different paths that they've been on. One of them sold players for €361 million. The other has spent €325 million in order to bring in talent. What are some of the things that a club like Spurs, that Daniel Levy in particular, could learn from Ajax's approach?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. First of all, try to be as good as Ajax are when it comes to producing players. I mean, a lot of clubs see Ajax, or at least traditionally have seen Ajax, as the benchmark when it comes to youth development. But they're clearly doing something very, very well if they can produce players like Gravenberch and Rensch almost on a yearly basis. It's like two or three every year. That's, I think, a universal lesson. Also, when it comes to buying players, I think it is an art in itself, you know, to buy players that perhaps are overlooked or other people don't quite appreciate. They do it really well, and they've been doing it really well for now 5-6 years. So it's not a one-off. Other lessons, I think, are harder to learn because the situation of Spurs and where Ajax sit in their domestic leagues is so different. It's hard to come up with too many parallels. But the bottom line always is, I think, try to be smart with your resources, whether that's financial resources or players as resources, players that you already have, players that you're developing. Try just to get the best out of it. And if you look at Spurs since 2019, it's clear that they haven't been able to do so because of a combination of wrong managerial appointments, transfer dealings that haven't been that successful. But of course, also we have to admit and acknowledge that their competition is much harder. And if you're Ajax, you're starting from a very high position. And if you get one or two things wrong, it doesn't probably make a big difference. But if you don't get everything 100% right, as Spurs did for a few blessed years under Pochettino, then the drop-off is quite severe because of the competition around you.
Yeah, I just think of Dusan Tadic as an example. You know, he didn't set the world alight at Southampton. Southampton fans probably weren't that disappointed to lose him to Ajax, and he goes to Ajax, just completely reinvents himself, and he's been a sensational player for them.
Yeah, it's been incredible. I mean, he's the one player who you kind of see as the face of this renaissance in Europe.
Yeah.
Because of what he did in 2019, but what he seems to be doing again. Yeah, I think it's a part of a vision to see a player that doesn't quite work out and think, actually, there is a player there. I mean, Sebastian Haller, you know, leading goal scorer in the Champions League. West Ham thought, oh, you know, what a dud. Spent all this money and he obviously can't hack it. It could well be that Ajax is more his level, but when you then take that confidence and that understanding that you get on a weekly basis from your domestic football and then take it into the Champions League and you're able to reproduce that, it shows you that there is a player there. And yeah, it takes, I think it takes a very special sort of expertise and feel for these situations to identify players that aren't nailed on improvements, but actually make them into improvements. And that's what Ajax do really well.
And Mark Overmars is such a big part of that as well, because Ten Hag's benefited from his wisdom in his role as sporting director and inherited such a fantastic and flourishing system. And what has his role been in this success, as well as, you know, CEO Edwin van der Sar? What have they done to create this?
Yeah, I think Overmars has been key in all of this. Overmars was, first of all, the sporting director who hired Ten Hag. So that's already a big feather in his cap. But you look at the transfer dealings, you look at the way the team has been constructed. Also, that change of strategy that we talked about earlier is absolutely key to Ajax's fortunes. They used to be a little bit stuck in their old ways, saying, yeah, we just have to play one specific way. We have to just have these youngsters. But they changed it. They became a lot more versatile when it comes to their playing, but also when it comes to the kind of players that they sign. I think Overmars has been absolutely instrumental in that, the real brains of the operation. And again, I think from a UK perspective, it's sometimes underestimated how European clubs tend to work with a strong sporting director who really makes the signings and takes a much more long-term view and a view geared towards maximizing the potential of the club rather than the natural short-term approach of a coach who just wants to have the best squad all the time and wants to have the best players all the time. If you have a sporting director that effectively is the boss of the player, of the manager, as is the case in most European places and certainly at Ajax, that allows you as a club to take a more strategic view of how things are. Ten Hag, having worked in Munich and having worked at Utrecht, understands that his role is to coach. And you will never find anyone saying, oh, Ten Hag, he signed Haller, you know, what a great move. He wouldn't have signed Haller. He would have been consulted. He would have said, yes, I like the player, but this is Ajax. This is Overmars finding these players and making these big calls.
All around the place at Ajax, everything seems to be going well. Everything seems to be working. Rafa, what do you think the future holds for Ten Hag? You mentioned in your piece, he talked about Bayern become his club and he's had a stint there before. Maybe one day he might end up back there. Is that the logical next step for the manager?
I think it's a logical step for him, but unfortunately that route seems to be blocked for a few years now with Nagelsmann being in place. He was twice in the running, and twice I think Bayern weren't quite sure for similar reasons that Ajax or the supporters might have not been quite sure, because of his personality, because of where he's from. Does he have the charisma? Does he have the presence to control the dressing room with Lewandowski, etc.? But it was very interesting because when I initially pitched the idea of doing something on Ten Hag, that was before they won against Dortmund. And the idea that I said to my editors, like, let's write about Ten Hag because he's almost sort of been the forgotten coach of European football. You know, 2 years ago, everyone talked about him. And then he had one less exciting year in the Champions League and all of a sudden nobody talks about him. Since then, of course... the situation has changed completely because now he's once again flavor of the month courtesy of those results against Dortmund. I think he is a very clever guy, and I think he understands that he needs to work in a very specific environment with people that he trusts around him, above him. And I think he'd be very, very careful of jumping into a club where that backing, that kind of familiarity, that kind of understanding with what's happening isn't there, because I think he is not a force of personality. He's not a Klopp, you know. He's not Conte. He's not Mourinho. I think he's a much more a technical coach. I think somebody who's very good with players, but a little bit quiet, almost introvert. I think he'll think long and hard before he trades what is a very well and beautiful and functioning setup at Ajax for something that might promise more money, but might be a lot more chaotic in the way that the club is organized and structured. And be really interesting to see what's going to happen next for him. I can't predict. I'm not sure he can.
And I suppose because he's got a bit more of a quieter personality, and Ten Hag isn't bigger than Ajax, which I think sometimes with coaches like Mourinho, he's always going to be bigger, or he will see himself as bigger than a lot of the clubs he works for. And that can be a bit of a clash. It's actually even more important that they follow up this success with the development off the pitch, with plans to build a new stadium for the women's team and the academy side. I mean, what's the long-term vision on this if he were to depart within the next couple of years and probably inevitably move on to another job? What does the future hold?
Well, I think Ajax will be fairly relaxed about it. I mean, of course, they want him to stay as long as possible, but I think they believe in their structures and their setup to the point that the people itself are become sort of interchangeable. It certainly works with the players to a certain extent. You see how teams change, but don't change at the same time. They stay competitive. They stay true to the Ajax ethos. And I think it'll be the same for whoever comes after Ten Hag. What I'd be more worried about if I'm Ajax is that somebody snatches the people upstairs and says to them what City effectively said to Barcelona, said, we're going to take you two guys that built this Barcelona team behind Pep Guardiola, the CEO and the sporting director, and we want them to replicate that here. And that's why I think City are such a well-run club. I think that's when things might get a little bit more complicated, because to find somebody who's so good at his job at Overmars particular and Van der Sar in a more business managerial role is harder, I think, than finding the next Ajax-type coach, because I think there's enough coaches in Germany and in Holland who will be able to take that blueprint and develop it further. But having the vision, having the know-how to execute everything on a high level, these guys don't tend to come around that often, especially if they're former players. That's something we haven't mentioned yet. I mean, how many clubs can you think of in the Champions League who are run by former players? Very, very few. There's only a handful. I can think of Bayern, and I can think of Ajax, and I think that's probably the end of it when it comes to really going all the way up to the CEO. And I think that makes them also very special and very different because of that expertise that they have on the footballing side.
Is he finally being accepted? I'm sure he is because of his success, but you mentioned how when he first came in, people weren't quite sure. He wasn't from Amsterdam, his accent, things like that, his personality. I imagine he's now much loved, or is there still a little bit of a resistance to fully embrace him? I mean, what's the reaction been from the fans alongside this success?
From everything I've learned and I've been told is that they absolutely do love and do appreciate his football, because it's been so thrilling. I mean, Ajax, they were a little bit off stage since the heyday of the mid-90s. They had some pretty poor seasons also domestically, where they were in mid-table for a few years, and now they're right back at the top of Dutch football and not too far off the top of European football. That might not be a sustainable situation. It might be more like, you know, 1 year they're there and then 2 years they're not. But still, that if you're an Ajax fan, that's an amazing position to be in, because I remember a few years ago there'd be all these articles about, you know, the European elite and how it's impossible for clubs outside the top five European leagues to ever be in the later stages of the Champions League, and Ajax are showing no, it's not. So I think you have to really have to take your hat off to them, and if you're an Ajax fan, it's a beautiful, beautiful situation to be in.
Just before we let you go, Rafa, I just wanted to ask one more question about Marco Overmars, because, you know, Newcastle have been linked with him a little bit recently, and there's no doubting that he is the best in class in that position at the moment. But you know, if you went somewhere like Newcastle, it doesn't necessarily all come together like it has done at Ajax, does it?
No, not necessarily, but I think there is no reason to think that he wouldn't be a success somewhere else. Of course, the Ajax thing makes it extra special and gives it another dimension. You know, this is a bit of a family. Everyone knows everyone. And of course, he would know the Dutch league and the players and who's coming through in the youth ranks much better than what happens in Newcastle or even in the Northeast or beyond that in England. But it comes down to making smart decisions. And I think the sporting directors that have worked across different clubs, I'm thinking of Ralf Rangnick, for example, they show that knowledge, that talent for spotting players, that way of relating to people, of developing people, of bringing out the best of people, that is sort of a skill that can be transferred to different countries, different situations. So I don't have any doubt that he'd be a great success wherever he does, really, based on what he's done so far at Ajax.
The Ajax fan base will be hoping that you'll stay there for a long time because you've certainly done an unbelievable job. Rafa, it's been brilliant to talk to you. I've really, really enjoyed this chat about Ajax. It's been really, really interesting. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Have a little look now, Flo, at what's been going on The Athletic. Is there anything that's floated your boat in recent days?
Yeah, there's a really good piece, actually, James Horncastle one, about Mourinho's tenure so far at Roma and looking at actually how his sort of quintessential style as a very sort of defensively minded coach has kind of worked in the complete opposite way, and Roma have massive defensive issues at the moment but have very high XG, creating loads of chances. I think they've had the second most amount of chances that have hit the woodwork in Serie A this season. So they're looking great going forward, but look really all over the place defensively. And it's a really interesting piece, actually, looking at the issues Mourinho has right now, how he might be able to solve them, what it's been like so far, missing out on Granit Xhaka, would that have transformed the situation? But yeah, really, really interesting, because I don't watch a ton of Italian football sort of outside the Champions League, so it's nice to kind of get a better sort of context and understanding of what's going on there right now, touching on Tammy Abraham as well since his move. So yeah, really interesting piece.
Yeah, let's get him on next week. Not Tammy Abraham. If we can get Tammy Abraham, let's get on. Let's talk to James Horncastle about the Italian football. I'd really like to do that, because like you, I don't watch as much of it as I'd like to. And it's a really interesting league this season. Plenty of other stuff going on The Athletic as well, and you can read all that plus Rafa's stuff as well. It's well worth going and checking out that Ajax piece, actually, as an accompaniment to the podcast that we've just done. The offer's still going at the moment for just £3.33 a month for new subscribers, so just go to theathletic.com/footballpod if you want to take advantage of that offer. Nice one, Flo, and thanks to Rafa for joining us today. Always great to speak to him. And of course, thanks to all you guys for listening as well. Do get involved in the comments section. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And wherever you do get your podcasts, if you are enjoying the show, then please leave us a review too. This was the Athletic Football Podcast. Mark Chapman and Matt Slater will be back with another episode tomorrow, so watch out for that. Hopefully you'll join us again.
The Athletic.